Okay, so for the final slide, I just want to take it up a notch to a much larger scale. So this is a project that I was involved in for nearly 10 years in England, and it just is about how we can create across schools and organisations the kind of networks that where research is the norm, I suppose. So this was a network, and this is the diagram that I've tried to... it was a complicated network. So we had four local authorities, we had one university, we also had two further education colleges, and we also had university teachers as well, all of them undertaking practitioner inquiry in their settings. So we had... the institutions could be schools or they could be seen as local authorities, and within those, there were teachers who were undertaking practitioner inquiry. Our ask was that those schools had at least one teacher, preferably two as a minimum, so that there was some dialogue and support involved in keeping this going when they weren't involved with the university. And then the university was a partner in this, with no answers, not all the answers. We had some expertise, they had expertise. And I think this is where that collaboration was really important. And we had to go in as a university team and dispel the idea that we were coming with a set of answers to tell the teachers what to do. And it was really important that that was got rid of right at the start. I was a relatively novice teacher in comparison to some of the people I was working with, except I had research expertise that was influential. I didn't know about teaching in Enfield in the north of London. I wasn't there to tell them what to do in their classrooms. I was there to support them in thinking about how do we make teaching in Enfield in your class better. So the project was about was a mixed project. There was lots of different teachers across different sectors, and it was about sharing the dialogue across those areas. It was also a cumulative project. It went on for a long time. It was then cut overnight by the coalition government. The project money was there one night and it went the next, as it wasn't important anymore to support teachers' education. But still, we did 10 years of working with these teachers, and some of the teachers were involved for that full 10 years. We had examples of teachers who started with us as NQTs, and by the end of their involvement, they were head teachers in primary schools. So we were able to show how practitioner inquiry was part of a career trajectory over time. And each academic year they were involved, they did one piece of practitioner inquiry that they made public and shared. And they're all available. There's about 250 case studies available on the Campaign for Learning's website. What I want to talk a bit about is how we created that network. And fundamentally, it was based on three things. It was a community of people, regardless of where we were based, whether we were based in the university research team, whether we were based in an FE college in Lewisham, whether we were based in the dentist school at Newcastle University, whether we were teaching on the coast of Cornwall in a special school, and we were coming together to think about how we could improve learning. And so we were a community of people, very different people, who were wanting to ask questions about how to improve metacognition and pedagogies for metacognition in our setting. And what we found was that the more that we did that, and that diversity of community supported it increased the amount of inquiry that was going on. So because we were asking questions and we were a diverse community, it meant that the questions were increased. But it also meant that we were able to share and we were thinking at a metacognitive level quite regularly, because we were talking about learning all the time. In terms of one example of what that looked like, so this is Wilbury Primary School. I should say, ethically, the universities don't like this, but I name all the schools and the teachers that I work with because this is their work. It's not my work that I'm taking credit for, and it's really important that they are named and they get the credit for their hard graft that they did. So this is Wilbury Primary School. It's a big primary school in Enfield, sixth form intake. You don't get many of those in Scotland. And about 1,000 children in the school. And it's also 98% EAL, and also 25% transient. So in terms of the kids and the start off in the year in September, 25% of them will have moved on to another school by the end of the year. And they were interested in peer and formative assessment, and particularly paired learning. In the first year of the project, they had two intervention classes and two control classes in their year two, so 7 and 8 years old, and they showed that their writing scores improved by doing this. over the moon. Tell everybody. Yeah, of course we'll publish it. Yeah, share it wherever you want. Tell Ofsted. It's brilliant. Effect size of 0.76. Well, anyone that knows Hattie's work, that's pretty good. Second year, rolled it out to all of the year two classes. So six classes. It didn't work. Please don't tell anyone. Please don't tell Ofsted that it's failed. And it was like, well, why has it failed? We know why it's failed. It's failed because they don't have speaking and listening skills. To do peer assessment, you have to have good speaking and listening skills. To be peer assessed, you have to be able to listen to your peer. To peer assess, you have to be able to have good speaking skills. I said, well, that's really important. In a time where peer assessment and formative assessment is being sold as an answer to all our ills, it's really important that we know it's not a simple fix. Publish it. Okay, we'll publish it. So they published it. It is available online about how it didn't work the way they expected. And in the third year, they went on to look at speaking and listening skills across that year too and how they could set up the ground, the baseline for being able to do formative assessment. What it meant in the project was we had these individual teachers and teams of teachers working to explore what was important in their setting over a number of years, but then sharing that with the network and sharing their expertise. And what we found in the network was that there was a criticality around the research techniques that were used, but also the pedagogies that were being used. This is another example. This is Camborne Science and Community College down in Cornwall. Different type of poverty down in Cornwall. It's really remote. There's not a lot of aspirations. And John Wellen, who was the teacher at Camborne, was involved for the full 10 years of the project. And it was interesting. At first, he was determined to go out on the in-service circuit and sell his approach. He thought he had all the answers to learning to learn. But as he engaged with the inquiry approach, he said, no, I don't have all the answers. I've just got lots of questions. I can't tell anyone how to do this. I can just give them lots of prompts and ideas as to what they might like to ask about. I need to find out more about what's happening in my school before I go tell anyone how to teach, which I thought was really interesting, the transition. Just as Philip was talking about, what was interesting in Camborne was they took the project approach of practitioner inquiry and started using it with the children. And so the children, about halfway through the time, started becoming co-researchers with John. And so the research culture went from the teachers to the students. And so the students started to be collaborative in the research approach in the school. And the data that's in that graph at the bottom is collected by the students and used by John as part of his inquiry. Another example, this is Willowfair School. So this is a school that where a new head teacher, she's actually moved north of the border now. She's in the borders somewhere as a head teacher, fed up with the English system. But she wanted to develop a research-engaged school, so first school aged from 4 up till 9. And she wanted to support both her colleagues and the children in thinking about what was research and how research was useful as a learning tool. And so they did a lot of training of the children. The equivalent of P4s were interviewing the P1s to find out what they thought worked in their setting. And what we saw in this school was four of the staff actually went on to do the master's with us, because they got the bug and they wanted to do it more formally. And the head teacher, in the end, although very nervously, went on to do the ED because she was really interested in how I could take this further. She got the bug. She wanted to know more. And what I want to do is just talk a bit before I finish about the network. It was a very diverse network. It included primaries, secondaries, special schools, further education, higher education, from different geographical and different socioeconomic parts of England. And what we were interested in was the learning that happened across that network. And so we looked for the transfer across the different parts of the group. And I think this is important in terms of how do you develop research engaged. It is about collaboration. So how do you manage collaboration? How do you support the learning that emerges at a system level? And what you're able to see is how one person's project was picked up on by different people. So what you've got in the middle is Jarkko Glassy, who is a senior lecturer in chemical engineering at Newcastle University. The blue are local authority people. The pink are primary colleagues. The purple are secondary colleagues. and the red are further education colleagues. The different coloured lines are the different things that they took away. So if it's a green line, they took away a piece of pedagogy to use in their context. If it's an orange line, they took away a bit of a research technique to use in their setting. If it's a black line, then they took away some kind of professional learning. I think in terms of engaging with what a research-engaged institution is, then we need to think about learning at multiple levels. There's the learning about what you're inquiring into, but there's also the learning about the different research techniques and how to go about researching. And we were really pleased to see this happening. This is another example. So this is a further education example. Not so many triggers with different people, but the same kind of diversity there in terms of who was picking up. And it was from primary right the way up to secondary and beyond into HE. What's interesting here is that one colleague get multiple things from the same presentation. So Jerry, who was a primary teacher down in Fleecefield, she went and took lots of different things from that same presentation. But other people, it was just one. So across the Learning to Learn project, we have cumulative data of how important it is to support this research over time. This tick box approach to practitioner inquiry is not helpful. The idea of it just being a one-off project that you do while undertaking a piece of work with the university is not helpful. It's about sustaining it and thinking about how do we keep this going over time. Very much fits with Anna's thinking about how do we sustain this, how do we support people in having a career trajectory within their schools, within the networks. I think there is something about how we encourage different types of practitioner inquirers, different types of practitioners in talking to each other. One of the strengths of the Learning to Learn network, and I'm not aware of anything equivalent, was the fact that we had all four sectors and early years talking to each other. And the commonality there was the research approach, was the practitioner inquiry. And hearing in the lunch queue at one of the in-services, it was two reception teachers, so four-year-olds, teachers of four-year-olds saying, do you know what, the children in my class come in and they can't problem solve. I need to do something to deal with the fact the parents have done everything for them up to now and they can't solve anything for themselves. And they were talking to someone from the dentist school at the university who's saying, do you know what, these postgraduates come in and they can't problem solve. The undergraduate tutors have done everything for them. And it's like, well, let's unpick that. What does problem solving look like? And yes, one was talking about four-year-olds and one was talking about postgraduates. But actually, what makes a good learner looks remarkably similar. And that's what we started to get at by looking at that meta level, which, because we were so different, meant that we couldn't talk as much about the nitty-gritty of our context, so-and-so said to so-and-so, and it's time, it takes us up a level. I should also say that in that project, none of the teachers, and there was about 200 teachers involved across the different settings, were paid to be part of that. They found it useful, and so they made the time to do it. We paid them back as a university by giving them a residential once a year, where we all met up in Bristol, which was halfway between us in the northeast and Cornwall. So Bristol was our hub where we met up. So just to finish off, and before we go to a Q&A opportunity, across these examples, what we see is practitioner inquiry supporting a closing down of the gaps between teacher learning and student learning. The two things need to complement, and inquiry, the intent that is shared and jointly owned, will support that. We think dialogue is really important, dialogue between teachers from different types of backgrounds and different types of experience, but also dialogue with students. One of the best examples I've got is Alison Whelan from Titherington High School in Cheshire, footballers' wives' country. She came to the conference and said, I'm a successful failure. Learning logs do not work in year nine. S2, 3 in secondary school. But by doing learning logs and opening it up to their feedback on what made a good learning log, we've learned an awful lot about how learning is recorded and how we think about learning. So I'm a successful, and that's a brave thing for a teacher to be able to do, to say I'm a successful failure. And so what we see is this mirror effect between what the teacher's doing and what the students are doing. If you want your students, go back to the EEF and toolkit, metacognition. If we want students to be metacognitive, then we have to have teachers who are being metacognitive. And so if we can see the link between practitioner inquiry as an inquiry-based pedagogy towards improving learning, then we'll see that in the classroom. I think it's about thinking about how we coach and support research engagement across different types of networks and different types of organisations. Thinking about their expertise, who has the expertise and how it is supported. And so some concluding thoughts. Shared understanding, purpose and vision in your setting. How do you start this off and what is shared, what's not shared? You know, are you all thinking you're researching? You just haven't talked about it yet. So, you know, like the colleague that Anna talked to. Yeah, no, I research. I just can't admit it. Or, yeah, I research, but it's just not something I speak about in this circle. Or, how do we think flexibly about what is research? And I think about, and this is me as a child of the 80s probably, so I have a graphic equaliser in my head that research is, we can do hardline university research or we can do something that is much more low level research to find out what's going on in our classrooms. And I think we need to think flexibly about how we move up and down that graphic equaliser in terms of how we think about the data that we're collecting and the types of questions we're answering. And when it's appropriate to turn everything up to full volume and when it's appropriate to have everything at a relatively low frequency. Thinking about networks and how you can support networks with the university, with other schools, with other organisations. I think the one that Philip talked about with the museum service, practitioner inquiry is becoming a currency that other services understand and are using in their normal practice. And don't forget, it's about learning. It's about learning, it's about teachers and students learning. And the more we can embed practitioner inquiry and research and in that learning process, the better. We have sort of 10-15 minutes time for some questions. And for those of us who are coming on to the second session, there we're going to go through a practical approach to thinking about how you design research questions and the types of data that you might talk about and think about. So have we got any questions? Have we got some mics as well? And the EduTalk at this point is turning off.